Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sports. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's You Are Tennis. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and I'm so excited to welcome today's guests, Antonio Mora, Jeff Grant, and Marty Collins. We're going to continue with last week's discussion of USTA's 2014 changes to the junior competition schedule. For those of you who didn't get a chance to listen last week, the archived podcast of the show is available at ParentingAces.com on the radio show tab. So I encourage you to take a listen when you have some time. But also want to encourage those of you listening live today to please call in with questions, because these gentlemen that I have on the line with me are very knowledgeable. They are tennis parents. They are involved in the world of junior competition with their own kids and have spent countless hours living the life of a junior player from the parent's perspective, and also can share the player's perspective and how these changes are going to impact them. For those of you listening who are junior players yourselves and you're off school today, congratulations for having the day off, I hope you guys will call in too and talk a little bit about your knowledge of these changes and how you think they might impact your ability to reach your goals with tennis, whether it's to play at a recreational level, to play at the collegiate level, to maybe move on to the pro tour, whatever your goals are, and would love to hear from you guys as well. Before I bring our guests on the line, I want to go to a quick commercial and just let you know that if you want to call in with any comments or questions, that number, as always, is 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. We'll be right back after this short commercial.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
Welcome back to the Parenting Aces radio show. I'm your host, Lisa Stone. And before I bring our guests on the line, I want to just kind of give you a reminder that this past week we had two listening meetings, one in Los Angeles, one in the Dallas, Texas area, and those were the final two scheduled listening meetings that USTA planned to gather input on these 2014 junior competition changes. If you were able to attend one of those meetings, I sure would love for you to call in today and share your thoughts on that. If you weren't able to attend, I'm hoping you've kept up with the posts on ParentingAces.com. I have posted summaries of those meetings based on notes that people had emailed me after the meetings, and there are lots of really good comments on those posts as well. So I hope you'll take some time and read through that. So Now to move on with today's show. Again, our guests are parent Antonio Mora, parent Jeff Grant, parent Marty Collins, who are all here to talk about the 2014 junior competition changes and their perspectives on how these changes could impact their children and our children moving forward. Guys, thank you so much for joining in today, and it could be a little tricky with all of us on the line together, so bear with me as I try to make room for everybody to say what they need to say, and let's just jump right in. So before we go forward, I just want to throw out to each of you, maybe you can give us like a 30-second kind of summary of where you stand on the changes or what you see is the most positive or most negative piece of the changes. And Antonio, I'll start with you, just putting you on the spot there.
All right, let's try to do it in 30 seconds. Cutting opportunities. The cutting on opportunities is dramatic. By more than two-thirds of national playing opportunities, the cutting in, at all levels, level ones, level twos, level threes, is terrible. They are also, there is no sectional play increase, which was, this was all predicated on. None of that has been planned. It's not going to happen. I think that the forcing kids to play only in these new super regions is going to make things much more expensive for parents. It's also going to make it much less interesting for kids who are not going to be able to go out and play against kids from around the country. And finally, the quota system, I think, is the one of the biggest catastrophes that has not been paid as much attention to in this whole process. I think it's going to directly contradict the other big basis of these changes, which is supposedly for the best to play the best. The quota system is a disaster. I'm happy to elaborate on that.
Great. Thank you. Marty?
Yeah. The most positive aspect of the change is the cutting of the sizes of the national tournament, because the national championships should not be necessarily for an opportunity for an expansive group, but for the competition, for the quality, and to find an actual champion. Also, I do believe an under-talked-about aspect of the total change in the comp is the de-emphasis on introducing the 12-year-old into the championship competition and emphasizing more development. I believe that flows perfectly from the changes that have occurred with regard to the international standards on 10 and under play.
Great. Thank you. And Jeff?
Yeah, I would just echo what Antonio said. I think that, for me, front and center is the use of quotas to allocate the spaces in the national tournaments. I think quotas are, generally speaking, unless you're trying to right some sort of social wrong, they're just an incredibly inefficient way to allocate scarce resources. And I think you're simply not going to have the best kids playing against the best kids. And when you combine that, a very inefficient and unfair allocation process, when you combine that with the 75% reduction in playing opportunities, you know, you're going to end up with a national tournament system that is really, it will become irrelevant. And secondly, I think the use of quotas will render the national rankings somewhat meaningless. The meat of the national schedule, the level threes, the level twos, the level fours, will just become meaningless tournaments, so a pathway to nowhere, so to speak. National play will be sectional play going to the championships, and the meat of the national schedule, which is hundreds and hundreds of great competitive matches every year, will just fly the wayside.
Can I respond to Marty so we just get into a discussion already, Lisa, or I don't want to hijack the
absolutely
conversation?
Absolutely. No, hijack away.
So, Marty, two of the things you said. You said that you want these things to be true national championships and that it shouldn't be sort of to allow an expansive group of kids to play. I'm going to just address, the Winter Nationals just a couple of months ago. Are you guys getting a very bad echo?
We are.
Yeah,
Antonio.
You'll have to back in, Antonio, I think.
Should I call back in? Is it real? Am I on?
Is it?
I think
let me make sure it's not me.
Okay, I'll call right back.
Let me hold up, Antonio. Before we do.
Yep.
You sure? I want to make sure it's not me too.
Okay, I'm still here.
Okay.
Okay.
All right. Let me. Marty, you're talking about the expanded. You know that it shouldn't be an expansive group that's getting into these tournaments. So they should be true national championships. Winter Nationals, the first cut in the 14 and unders, the player ranked 211 in the country did not get in, partially because of quotas that let kids who were lower ranked, including the kid who was ranked 955 in the country, get in. So the quotas, in effect, are the ones who are really creating the problem, because if not, you would have had the top 211, you know, the lowest ranked kid was 211 in the country, would have gotten into that tournament. That seems pretty reasonable to me. Sure, would you want exactly the top 128? Possibly, but some kids are going to be playing up or whatever. 211 seems awfully reasonable to me and awfully competitive, especially since that kid was, I think, number 11 in Florida at that point. Obviously a very good kid who could have been able to play, who was that number 211. So I think the national championships are getting very, very good competition as it is, and I don't see how cutting the draws and cutting the number of tournaments is going to somehow make it that much better. And second, you brought up the 12 and unders. That is something that completely mystifies me, given the history of what's happened with tennis in the United States. To cut the 12 and under tournaments, as is proposed now, no spring nationals, smaller draws on the other tournaments. Don't we remember what happened 20 years ago when they cut the 12 and under tournaments from the national schedule altogether and the 12 and under rankings? What happened back then was precisely what we're dealing with now. This is what they call the silent generation or the lost generation. That's the direct consequence of eliminating competition in the 12 and under groups.
No, if you had eliminated the competition in the 12 and unders 20 years ago, that would have been the group that would have included James Blake and the last crop of guys that made it. It's after they went back to that we haven't produced anyone.
No, but Blake and Roddick is you know, what that group
Roddick
produced.
Roddick is almost a singular figure from 2003. He's not even in the same developmental class as James Blake. James Blake is older.
I agree. So those are the best products we've had since the 12 and under changes kicked in back then, compared to, you know, the Agassiz and Sampras and Changs
and
all the others that we had in the, you know, we had seven in the top 10.
I believe the overall statistics with regard to viewing 12s as a jump street and a viewpoint for future champions is we've had one champion in the 12 that went on to make it in the top 50. It's Gimelstob. No,
but that's not. I don't think that's relevant to look at who was number one back then. It's a factor. It's the fact that there was competition for everyone out there, that they could go out and get great competition and play nationally and have that carrot of being able to play a national championship instead of just having to sit around your section and not have those carrots.
Is that given the change in world play, the de-emphasis on competition early, the extra emphasis on development early, you cannot create a system that creates a chase for championship or national recognition too early if you want a broad base to take up the challenge of the sport and take it up for to bring a high quality to the sport. You have to allow more people to incubate at a longer period of time and feel as though they have an opportunity to pursue high-level tennis.
Okay,
let me just jump in there.
Guys, we have a caller on the line. Hang on 1 second, okay? Hang on, let me just pull this caller in. I have a call from area code 561-400. Are you there? 561-400?
That's the Boca area.
Okay, well, maybe they're just listening, so we'll put them back on hold and let them listen. And I'm sorry to interrupt you guys. Go ahead.
I think Jeff should jump in. Yeah, Marty, your point's well taken. But you know, if you want to choose to train your child or your player that way, that's a choice you can make. If you don't want to compete in the 12s, if you want to develop in the 12 and 13-year-old age,
I choose to adapt to the ITF international change. That's the one thing I don't understand about American tennis and the idea that we're going to simply ignore total global change. It's a historic rule change, and we're going to simply say we're better. I'm talking about
the
under because it directly flows into the rationale for the junior comp changes.
It does in the sense that they're hoping that there will be a lot more. I mean, I think that the rationale for the 2014 changes predicated on a lot more kids coming into the sport and going into sectional play, and therefore you will have a situation down the road, if all goes well, and it's a big if all goes well, there'll be a lot more kids playing and sectional competition will be much more viable. The reality is, Marty, right now it's not. You know, I'm sure you're familiar with Gordon Bellis and his daughter Cece from your section. How do you respond to Gordon, whose daughter is 13?
Let's let Jeff finish his point.
Sure, absolutely.
Northern California is, I'd say maybe not the strongest section of the country, but it is one of the stronger sections. And his daughter, 13, has won the 18 sectional championship. There is not enough competition for her. Now, if you take that, if you go to the northern section, the Pacific Northwest, the Southwest, forcing kids to play among themselves in those sections is a recipe for just total demoralization in my mind. The kids, there's just not enough kids to play. Now, maybe 5 or 10 years down the road, if 10 and under 10 is dramatically successful, I'm skeptical about that, and there's hundreds of kids playing in Northern California and plenty of people for CC to play, maybe then you could make the case that these changes make sense. But right now, and this is true even in the big sections like Southern California and Florida, there's simply not enough sectional competition so that just playing simply in your section provides enough competition. And again,
Gordon Bellis makes excellent points on it with regard to the fact that I agree that there's going to be some pain in the transition. He outlines it with regard to, in my case, having a 10-year-old that played up because there's no tens that would be appropriate for him. I accepted the fact he would have to play up. Having a 7-year-old going on 8 that does not compete, that only trains, the rules would not necessarily affect our family the same way as it does the families that Mr. Bellis does point out. It will affect the sophomores in high school. Maybe there's some juniors in high school, some of the 6th graders that are transitioning in. But this is something that was going to occur under any circumstances in order to broaden the game. I do know that there will be some people hurt in that transition, but I do think there are broader goals that we should be trying to pursue. I don't think we should necessarily condemn the committees that put this together, because at least they were attempting to address.
But Marty, nobody's ever. I have never condemned them. I have actually spoken out quite clearly that I believe that these were people who were well-intentioned and who had, who wanted to do good, who thought they were doing the right thing. And I think, unfortunately, what happened was I don't think it was properly vetted. It didn't go out to enough people. And I think there was, the parent factor was virtually of current parents. There were no current parents, only one current parent who was involved in that committee. And I think that was a perspective that was missed, and that perspective is what has come out in the past year. But I think when you talk about cutting back on the 12s and that there shouldn't be competition, or at least as much competition at that level, I think I can agree to disagree, but I think it is a huge problem to do that, because I think most competitive kids want competition. They want to see a progression. At that age, I'm telling you, I was a competitive kid. I was the oldest of 6 kids, all but one of whom were competitive tennis players.
And I think that that's addressed by the fact that they do not totally eliminate it. Furthermore, that initial reduction in the 12 is what will normalize the sectional play and the children's experience as they matriculate into it, and the 14s, where it's further adjusted to raise the level of tennis required to meet championship level, the new definition that they are clearly putting in, that they are clearly saying we want a finer cut of prime with regard to providing a place for national play.
Let me read to you something that was written a few years ago talking about how the silent generation began, and that tennis people believe that it began when American tennis czars sought to make what was then eliminating when they eliminated rankings for all the kids under the age of 12. The goal was to replace preteen cutthroat competition with a genuine love for the game. And this is a quote now from a guy who runs, or who at least at that point ran Saddlebrook. In hindsight,
What was the year of the actual change where they first cut back on the 12?
I think it was the late 1980s, but don't quote me on that. And so he says, in hindsight, we made a huge tactical mistake. Our kids are at least 2 years, a couple of hundred matches behind everyone else in the world. I truly believe that, and I think that by cutting competition at the highest levels in the 12s, and then later in the other categories too, we are making a huge mistake. Jeff Grant has last week talked about the number of tournaments in under Tennis Europe. You're talking about international tournaments. Jeff, why don't you address that and tell him what you talked about last week? It seems to me that there are many more tournaments available under the ITF and under Tennis Europe than there are here in the United States for elite 12 and unders.
Yeah, Marty, in Tennis Europe, in the 14 and unders, there's 175 pan-European tournament opportunities in Europe for 2013. For 12 and unders, the number is 138. And that's going to compare to nine.
That's intercontinental, right? So that's like from Bosnia to Paris.
Right, but that's only
from,
double the population of the United States.
To be fair, the population catchment area is about double. Right, so the catchment area of Tennis Europe is about double the size.
So we're not just talking apples and apples. We're talking apples and pears, maybe.
Well, if you normalize
just double the number
ratio, the numbers, right? So think it's 18, right? You've got 18 against 175, right? I mean, it's on a totally different order of magnitude. Now, each one of those tournaments has got a qualifier. Each one of those tournaments got a back draw. There's hospitality available for each one of those tournaments, and a lot of those tournaments have got 100 kids on the waiting list, and you know, should we be surprised that 75 of the top 100 men in pro tennis right now are Europeans?
We have to take into aggregate demand totals for the game, to which Europe, unfortunately, is probably surpassing the United States. Also, I don't necessarily believe that what ultimately ails junior tennis is inherent to the actual structure, but also more related to how we orient ourselves to the game and our family structures. I've been getting a great education with regard to how adult league tennis kind of detracts from junior tennis, and it also separates the family and the experience that ties children to the game. So, I think there's a lot of factors that are uniquely American on what ails having large masses of junior players that will then result in just a finer cut of prime players simply by having more players playing junior tennis.
Marty, you know, you raise a really good point there, The reality is that under the new structure, you know, families are going to be traveling all over the place, different tournaments, different age groups, you know, very little choice. If my kid's got a family wedding and it happens to coincide with one of the two national ranking events, you know, he's out of half those tournaments, right? If we've got an SAT exam for a 16 or a 17-year-old during one of the weekends of the level threes, well, bad luck. There's no other choices, right? I mean, under the old system, there were a lot of choice, and there was a lot of opportunities to play at lots of different times of the year. And a lot of those tournaments had big, big waiting lists on them, so there was the demand was there.
I understand that there are things that could be improved about the structure. As I read it, I don't believe that it was ever a finished deal. I do think it was a big change in terms of implementation. But, I mean, it's clear that there are things that can be tweaked about it. I've got views on the fact that I don't like the language with regard to quotas. However, I don't like the idea of wild cards being held by the national body, right? You can't say it's an earned investment system and then actually hold some wild cards. I think there's an opportunity for some synthesis between all of us parents who have concerns about that sort of contradiction. Maybe perhaps we should have these people that are deemed wild card worthy play in the qualifier that since I do believe they should cut the national draws, but I do maybe believe there should be some flexibility in some that would not otherwise qualify. I think that there is opportunities for synthesis, but I do not think that it should be scrapped. And I think that the principal ideas behind the change were in the right direction.
Well, let me ask you then specifically. You don't think that it's a good that it's going to hurt kids to not have choice, to not be able that your child instead of being able to play.
I think that those who would be qualifying at the national level, if there are reduced opportunities, and now they have to make a choice to play one particular tournament because the other opportunity doesn't exist anymore. They got hard choices.
Let's look at your kids. You're in Northern California, right now.
Yep.
Under the current system, you've got there are four regionals, four regional weekends throughout the year, four national open weekends throughout the year, and the four super nationals. You pretty much can play all those tournaments within a reasonable driving distance of Northern California. You almost every single regional weekend you'll be able to get somewhere, Southern Cal, NorCal, maybe might have to go a little further to Arizona. But they're certainly within your realm. Most of the level twos and level threes, you'll find one that is within driving distance for you. With this new system, your kid may have to go all the way to Texas. How does that make sense?
Our region doesn't include Texas, but if they had to go to Texas, it would
Maybe it's the Pacific Northwest that has to go to Texas. I'm sorry
No, what it is that the Southwest is part of the Western Seaboard, the way that they did it, and some would probably prefer to go to Texas. I understand that culturally the Southwest may now identify more with Texas than they do with the West. Maybe that's a mistake in terms of the regionalizing it, but I took a good look at
that. No, your region does include Texas. The final proposal is
I looked at the March
Hawaii,
12
Pacific,
document.
Northern
I mean,
California,
I looked at the
Southern
March
California.
2012 document. I looked at the March 19th, 2012 document.
All right, so then I'm looking at the
in
wrong
another,
document
not
here?
In that.
I think the point is, I think the regions create substantial. I mean, the notion of these regions, forcing kids to play close to home. The reality is, it's in a lot of cases going to have the opposite effect.
I think that anomalies may exist, but I looked at it and it looks fairly contiguous with our cultural and regional mores here.
Right, but
I'm in Florida and I know
some differential. The Southwest thing, where the Southwest is included with the Pacific, kind of, you could say, hey, maybe they want to be with Texas. I don't know.
Well, let's talk about Florida and Lisa's in Georgia. The Southeast region, let's call it that, super region, includes Louisiana, Arkansas, Mississippi. Kentucky up there to the north and on the other side up to North Carolina all the way down to Key West. Right now, Florida kids can usually pretty much play almost all those tournaments except for the Super Nationals within big driving distance, let's say 10 hours or so if they have to go to Georgia. But now this is going to create so many fewer regionals that they're going to have to be spread more throughout the region. So you're going to have a kid from Louisiana who's going to have to come all the way to Miami when that kid could have just driven over
to Houston.
All the way
to Miami? Is that less than 10 hours? I mean, is that more
Louisiana,
than 10 hours?
Louisiana to Miami?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. It's at least 20. And,
okay.
And that kid could
so
have driven
I,
a few
I mean,
hours
I,
over
I,
to Houston.
Okay. So we may have created some distance issues in one part.
No, we didn't. No may about it. There are serious distance issues that have been created.
I cannot defend every aspect of the sectional changes.
Right, but giving people the opportunity, in other words, if Antonio is able to get a cheap flight from Miami to New York, it may be a lot cheaper for him to fly from Miami to New York on a weekend in May than it is to fly to get from Miami to some town in Louisiana. Now, why not give him the choice? Right? At the end of the day, why not let him
to fly there in order to provide the opportunities that exist today for our children to qualify for national play by playing somewhere else?
Say, yeah, say, save time and save money.
I don't agree with it. No, I think it creates too many anomalies in the system. Now, what do I do agree with about travel? Traveling for competition, using the tennis recruiting network to find five-star blue-chip players to go travel, meet, and compete against. Forget the point, as I'll put it that way. And I think that that is a worthy reason to travel. If you, if maybe you're going to take an ITF route or something like that, but I think travel is purely for competition, not for the point.
Well, yeah, but I think it's it, yeah. Again, we don't debate
purely
around
absolutely
but
purely.
The
I would reward. I would take away points from these national tournaments if they're so prestigious. If it means so much to say that I played at Kalamazoo, award no points.
What does that accomplish? I'm not sure I'm following.
It accomplishes divining those who want to compete and be an actual champion from those that are pursuing a number.
But then how
I've
would
heard
you?
I've that Kalamazoo is the tournament that all kids want to play. They should want to play it for a singular reason, and that is because it is a tournament of champions.
Right, but selection into that tournament is based on USTA
ranking. A bunch of points and a bunch of accomplishments during the year. But to be the champion is to be the champion. And that's what I believe. Now,
right, but
and
Corey, I think a lot of kids, realistically, you know, whether the draw is 128 or 192, and this applies to Wimbledon,
the
US Open.
I'm with
Creasy
on the draw.
Wait, hang on.
No, I'm talking about realistically, if you look at the Wimbledon championships last year, there were 128 men in the draw. You know, realistically, how many men do you think had a chance to win that tournament out of the 128?
I'm a tennis purist. I say 128. I will never take away the accomplishments of those that make that draw.
But that's not a realistic estimate.
I'm a tennis purist.
It's a nice philosophical.
It is philosophical.
It's
how I enjoy the game. That's what brings me the joy.
In other words, if you wanted to really, you know, realistically, statistically, any way you want to look at it, there's probably maybe 20 guys that were going to that tournament with a realistic, and when I say realistic, call it a greater than, you know, 5% chance of winning the tournament. Right?
Correct.
The same thing's true for Kalamazoo. Kids are motivated at different levels, and that's the great thing about rankings. Rankings motivate across a broad, broad range of kids. You know, the kid who's ranked 500 who's trying to get to 300 because 300 will get him into a better tournament. The kid ranked 200 trying to get into the top 100. Kid ranked 20
right.
trying to get into the top 10. And that's one of the beauties of tennis and the beauties of rankings. It doesn't really matter where you are. You've got
something to aspire to. We do so much ranking that – It dulls the senses at some point, right? We're doing sectional rankings, right? Where am I in my section? Where am I nationally? Oh, what does TRN have to say about how I play tennis? Oh, and then what do all these things mean as they interrelate with where I want to go with my tennis? Do I want to be seen nationally as an ITF player, or do I want to be looking like I want to go to college? I think the rankings serve good purposes and all that, but at some point it loses its effectiveness. We just start chasing the points. We stop thinking about pursuit of excellence in the game. It diminishes what we've set up as our structure to call someone a champion. I think that's what these rules and changes address.
Guys, I have to interrupt. We have to go to commercial real quick. It's a short one. Keep those thoughts, and we'll be right back after this break.
This is Jason Haynes, CEO of the UR Tennis Network. We are proud to announce the 2013 summer camp season has begun. At ussportcamps.com, you can plan out a Nike tennis camp experience. These are offered to both adults and juniors for day and overnight camps. Visit ussportcamps.com to pick up a brochure and join over 50,000 youth who say yes to our summer camp experience. Join a Nike tennis camp at www.ussportcamps.com or call us at 1-800-NIKE-CAMPS. In 2013, let our summer camps be your victory. Choose the Nike Tennis Camps and take your game to the next level.
Have a great day.
We are back on the air with Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's You Are Tennis. I'm your host, Lisa Stone. We are discussing the 2014 junior competition changes that are scheduled to go into effect in January. And on the air with me today are Antonio Mora, Jeff Grant, and Marty Collins. And we're having a pretty in-depth discussion right now about how the rankings impact our kids and their abilities to progress in the sport. And I'm sorry, guys, that I had to interrupt y'all to go to break, but let me just give the call-in number again real quick. If any of our listeners would like to call in and comment, that is 714-583-6853. Again, 714-583-6853. So, guys, you guys were discussing the issue of rankings, and let's jump right back in.
Well, let me just get in that I don't think this system does anything to improve the ranking situation. In fact, it's creating a bigger problem because now you've got the sectional rankings become so much more important because they are the way that you can get into the level ones and the level threes. So now you have to really focus on your sectional ranking. And what we're seeing in Florida now is that you've got kids who are actually traveling for level sixes in Florida in order to try to get their rankings going, and that's going to get even more intense as time goes by when, you know, these things do kick in January.
That's an interesting point. And go ahead, Jeff.
Sorry, one of the beauties of tennis, you know, and I think one is that sort of is the objectivity. I mean, rankings provide, you know, whether you think they're accurate or not accurate, whether it's points per round or star. You know, there's an objective criteria by which people are judged. You don't have to worry about whether the coach is going to pick you for the team. And so, I mean, I think, Marty, I think many people would take your position that, you know, development is more important to focus on the rankings, and I would to a certain extent agree with you. But again, you know, it comes down to a matter of personal choice. You can decide to develop your player the way you want to develop him. I can decide to focus more on development through competition if I choose
that.
Why curtail that choice? You know, why, it's almost like...
Because you have to have a broader, much larger base of sectional players in order to turn around the number of competitive international juniors, ultimately, that America produces. At least I believe that is the case.
But what do you say to the...
Eliminating the more national opportunities and redirecting play sectionally.
Well, what do you say to the kid in the northern section that just doesn't have a critical mass of sectional opportunities, or the Pacific Northwest, or even Northern
or Nebraska? But again, Jeff, here's I think again a real big philosophical difference that I think I speak for most parents on this. The tournament schedule should not be focused on developing the next great American champion. We have got hundreds of kids every year.
No, it should be good, but it should include broadening the base of players.
But how does reducing the level of tournaments broaden the level the number of
players? And cutting
players,
the draw.
How do you grow by shrinking?
Because new forms of play have been introduced and provided space to be scheduled in the new calendar. It may not be perfect, but
you're saying
you know
that's
what
a very
going?
Broad
I'm
statement.
Going
explain
with
that to me.
Universal rate of play. I'm going with interplay between adults and children. I'm going
okay.
with different forms of play than are purely the
All right, Marty,
the
as
tournament
as I've
play.
Said before,
and I'm going
as
with
I've said
additional
before.
Tournament opportunities at the sectional
okay.
level.
But it's very nice to talk about it in broad terms like that.
It may be philosophical in Southern
okay, well,
and in Florida.
Let's talk it.
We are doing universal rated play here.
Let's talk
right?
in practice.
I mean, we are
let's
moving
talk in practice.
Forward.
Marty, great for NorCal, but the rest of the country isn't. And I actually think universal. I actually think universal ratings
whether,
is a good
like,
idea. And that was
ignore the entire. They ignore the entire introductory range that has occurred. People may have objections to red ball, orange ball, and green ball, but it is happening. Okay, and that is what is going to be feeding into these comp changes. You can't just cleave off what you may not have experience in and not want to talk about it. And
Wait, Marty, it's not, you're talking in terms of that this is all happening. I'm not seeing it. We're not seeing it in Florida. Can I finish my point?
Go ahead, Marty.
Let me talk. We are seeing a dramatic decline in tenant under competition in Florida. Huge decline as a result of the changes last year. We now do not have people are not showing up for tournaments, for tenant under tournaments. Tenant under tennis has died in Florida on a competitive basis. There is minimal play. Will that change later? Maybe. I'm not saying that it won't. And again, I have never opposed universal ratings. I think universal ratings is a good idea. I think we should see what happens and have that and see if there can be adult-child competition. But universal ratings were one of the reasons that they went ahead and did this change, but then they didn't implement them. They did not implement universal ratings, but went ahead with – let me finish.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
Okay? I'm not saying anything that's not true. USTA did not decide to use universal ratings. You can even see it in the document. They refer to universal ratings, but it was never actually implemented. So it does not exist. That was supposed to be one of the legs that this all stood on, was that universal ratings would come into play and that there would be more competition sexually. That has not been implemented. As far as I know, there is no intention of implementing it any time in the immediate future. So all this stuff that you're talking about, maybe it's happening in Northern California. It is not happening anywhere else in the country, nor are there any concrete steps being taken that I know of to have that happen. So you can talk about adults playing kids and all these other great opportunities and all that, but that is not happening anywhere right now, and we are not seeing an increase in tournament play from the younger kids as a result of 10 and under tennis anywhere that I know of. Again, I have a very clear picture of what's been happening in Florida.
And I completely believe you. And what I'll say is that these things are being implemented in Northern California. As I understand the intention, it was for the sections to do these initiatives as they saw fit because, they didn't want to be micromanage at that level. And that's what I see occurring here. Now, as I know, Texas to be doing is a little bit more stringent with regard to they made it a hard transition. They're forcing, everyone to play, 10 and under to actually do the steps. That's more of the
Florida did that model 15 months ago.
And
so we're all seeing the consequences already.
Hey, following
Florida,
I don't disagree that there may be some hard transition. It happened in the LPA.
I'm curious, Marty, as an advocate of 10 and under, and look, I can see both sides of the discussion there, but the reality is, and the big push here, and the big push as it relates to 2014, is
sure.
that 10 and under 10 is going to swell the ranks of junior tennis players.
You're
now,
correct, and I do have a specific
data,
perspective
data,
on that.
The data,
I think you're right, Jeff.
The data is that the number of kids playing 10 and under tennis has collapsed. The number of kids playing 8 and under tennis has gone to zero. 2 years ago in Southern California, it wasn't like you had an 8 and under tournament every weekend, but there were a bunch of 8 and under events. There was no rankings for 8 and unders, but kids could play. I think there is now not one single 8 and under event in Southern California. You look at the draw sizes of the 10 and under in Southern California, they are down, I'm going to say, somewhere between 70 and 75%.
I'm not particularly dissuaded by that, but it is of concern because I do have concerns about implementation at the community level. I'm pessimistic that the clubs, unless they're actually an evangelist for, will ever actually do it, or they were funded to paint the courts, will ever actually do it. But at the community level, I've got a lot of different reasons why I think it's the best way to go because you don't get necessarily the professionalism at that level, and you need simpler ways to play.
We have a caller on the line. I'm going to interrupt
sure.
you one second, Marty. Caller 440-343, are you on?
Yes, I am. Hello?
Hi. Do you have a question for us?
Hello.
Yes, hi. Do I have to give my name?
No.
Okay. All right. I was an elementary phys ed teacher, and that was my background, my career. And when the 10 and under tennis came into effect, and I am now in Florida, I actually believe 10 and under tennis, you should have targeted the elementary schools, both private and public. And I believe that the USTA should target the elementary schools, get these physical education teachers motivated, and then they can actually stir up a ground level of a lot of children that are so interested in the sport that they may then want to continue in a club situation or in an academy situation.
Yeah. You know, I'm not an expert.
Target.
I'm not an expert on exactly what their efforts have been in Florida with targeting the schools, but I know that nationally that has been that was part of the. I don't think our focus on this conversation should be 10 and under tennis because we're more focused on the 2014 changes. But part of what the USTA was trying to do with 10 and under tennis was to try to make it cheaper and so that it could go to the schools and that would be one of the ways to feed kids into the tennis system. So I think it's a great idea, and I think the USTA is trying to do that. I just don't know how far they've gone with their efforts.
Okay.
I think it's a great idea.
I think she makes a wonderful point about trying to get it in the schools. I think that for us as Americans, I think we shouldn't lose sight of the ITF rule change. And it's not, you know what? A lot of people in the industry want to regard it as a mandate. There's only one mandate, and that is that people 10 and under not use a regulation ball. How they implement is left to our many labs of experiment that, you know, God has blessed us here in America with. And as long as we find a way for kids to get good in competition with the green ball and accords with the ITF regulations, I think it's going to do good. I think it's going to allow community tennis to grow. And then we're able to talk about the numbers that would justify the comp changes. But to everyone's point, I do understand a lot of the concerns you have with the actual mechanics of it. I can't say
Thank you for calling in. I appreciate it. Okay.
Yeah, I would just, you know, I know we're coming close to the end here. I would just, you know, say, you know, and there's an enormous amount of risk associated with what's being proposed here, both in the 10 and under tennis initiative and the 2014 changes. If everything goes according to the theoretical plan that the USTA has put forward here, 10 and under tennis is going to result in massive amounts of kids coming into the tournament structure. Sectional play becomes much deeper. The need to travel nationally becomes a lot less, and so on and so forth. And everything, you know, everything's hunky dory. The reality is, the early returns on 10 and under tennis, as Antonia said, are not that good. The reality is that, and you know, could be a situation where it's darkest before the dawn. But the reality is that competitive play at the 10 and under level has collapsed across the country. And the 2014 changes, you know, the opening statement regarding the 2014 changes are that they're predicated on the dramatic on dealing with the dramatic increase in competitive players at the junior level through the 10 and under initiative. Now, if they get this wrong, you know, the pillars of these changes are basically going to be knocked down. And, you know, I think an enormous amount of risk is being taken here, and if they get it wrong, you know, national junior competition is going to collapse. And any hope, you know, we have of, you know, developing the next, you know, number one player in the world are shot.
Okay, I want to interject as the parent of a current high school sophomore who aspires to play college tennis. If these changes go into effect as stated right now in January, that will be my son's second semester junior year of high school, which is the peak of his college recruiting time. And for kids in his class, graduating class of 2015, this could be disastrous for these kids. And it's a real shame. And that's really my reason for getting involved in this, is protecting my son's ability to continue to develop as a player. He is, as I've said many times, one of those late bloomers and is needing extra time to develop. But to cut his opportunities at the peak of his recruiting season is going to be disastrous for him. And I've talked to parents of other kids in his graduating class, his recruiting class, who feel the exact same way. And, you know, it would be different if USTA had said, we're going to phase this in over the next 4 to 6 years or something to that effect. But that's not what's happening. What's happening is this is going into effect blanketed across the board for every age group on January 1 of 2014. And I'm not sure that USTA has considered the repercussions for those kids who are in the midst of recruiting.
Yeah, I think it'll hurt them more than it'll hurt kids in the future. But I think in the end, it will be the same. All these, you know, a lot of kids, no matter how it's phased in, will be hurt because there will be fewer college recruiting opportunities, and college coaches are going to just keep going to foreign kids as they have been going in ever greater numbers. And again, as I said earlier, and I think we didn't go down that road, you know, this system should be more focused on kids who want to compete, who want to get their tennis better, and who want to be able to have national competition and be able to then go on and play college tennis, and who want to be able to play on different surfaces. And this new system is going to limit kids from, you know, kids from California. When are they ever going to play on a clay court, Marty?
When they decide to go to get better on clay.
But where are they going to get those? Where are they going to get that clay court competition when you've got so few clay courts, especially in Southern California? You know, unless kids are wealthy and members of a country club that has clay courts, there's virtually no clay court tournaments anywhere in Southern California. So these kids are almost never going to get to play on clay. My kid is never going to get to play an indoor tournament. And I'm telling you, it's different. It's different tennis. And kids play somewhat differently in different parts of the country too. So it's limiting exposure on so many different levels, limiting exposure to surfaces, limiting exposure to kids, limiting exposure to college coaches. I just don't understand. If any parent wants to make the choice that their child doesn't have to play nationally, I respect their choice. Richard Williams obviously did tremendously well with Serena and William and Venus. But why take away choice from parents and coaches who believe otherwise? I just don't understand.
We have another caller on the line. I think it is our buddy Saul. Saul, are you there?
It is me.
Oh, good.
Hey, guys.
Hi, guys.
Hi, everybody.
Hey, hi, Saul.
Hello.
It's sad that I recognize your number now.
I think you have it memorized.
Yeah, for sure.
Anyway, here, I had to jump on real quick. You guys started to get into the college aspect of it, and that's kind of where it weighs on me the most, because college tennis is a big issue and a big problem as it is right now. And what is obviously happening is the biggest argument going on about college tennis is the fact that there's such a huge influx of the foreign player coming into the college tennis scene. So if you look at it from this perspective, that a lot of these larger national tournaments are opportunity grounds for college coaches, especially you look at the mid-majors, Division II, NAIA, Division III coaches, to be able to go and watch large groups of kids play at the levels to where they think they can improve their teams the most. What's going to happen is that these coaches aren't going to be able to use a recruiting budget that they have to go travel around and see the large pools. They may be able to pick and choose an area to go, but for instance, my college that I graduated from at UMBC, you know, the coach there is very unlikely to head into a specific section alone to see a single recruit play that is seeking out his school. What's going to happen is he's going to end up relying on videos of kids that are being sent in to him. When you do that, what you're doing is now you're putting each one of these kids who may pass an eye test as an American player at one of these tournaments, and the coach says, this kid has something that I can really see, and you're putting them on equal grounds with the kid from France, the kid from Germany who sent the video in and has a resume that goes along with that, where he can say, well, you know, kid from Germany, his rating says that he's better than the kid from here, so why wouldn't I go to him at this point? The system's kind of leaning towards pushing into that more, not helping to facilitate the American player wanting to go into college. And the goal of all these kids, their goal, you know, should not be to be the next great player in the world. It's their initial goal should be to play at college tennis. If they succeed in a path where it starts to lead to where, you know, funny, going around the chat rooms right now is the term outlier for a player. Well, the kid that's going to become the next great American player, to me, is the outlier. And he'll start to set himself apart from that and move beyond that goal. But 99% of these kids, if not even greater percentage than that, can play college tennis. And it can be a pathway to get them into a college, whether it's on scholarship or just a, if it's a Division III school that doesn't take scholarships, it gives a coach a chance to say, hey, administration, we have a kid that can play for our team. Let's give him an edge in above somebody else to come into the school. And that's become a success. That's where tennis becomes a success for these kids. That's where they're going to get hurt.
Great point, Saul. And you know, the college pathway has to be an important piece of this whole discussion, in my opinion. I mean, sure, developing the next great American champion, the next, you know, the next Americans who are going to show up in the second week of the U.S. Open, that's all great. But that is such an infinitesimal percentage of overall junior players that really the focus has to be on getting these kids into college, through college, and keeping them involved in the game so that their children and their children's children continue to play tennis and be involved in the sport.
Well, just to me, I mean, to push people into regions and have growing tennis within regions and within your state and within your community, I think that's great. I mean, grow as many tournaments, throw as many tournaments out there as possible. Give as many options as possible, but don't do it at the expense of the kids that are willing to go an extra distance to play and reach out for stronger competition. I don't see elimination of a tournament if, look, to me, if a tournament director wants to host a tournament, let him host a tournament. You know, if he wants a draw to be 128 or 264 or whatever the heck it ends up being, let him do it. It's his prerogative. Don't tell him no. You know, anything that damages our game and keeps people from being able to play, to me, is a problem. You know, and that's coming from the player side, the coaching side, the business side. I've got my hands in all of them. And I hate seeing anything that's damaging to our sport. And long term, this just cannot be all around good the way it's set up to go. That's my point. And with that, sorry guys, I gotta go.
Thanks for
calling. I would just you know, make my last point saying, if you were a businessman, you were weighing up the risks associated with these changes against the potential rewards if things go really well. I mean, you would never implement them. You know, the risks, the unintended consequences are way, way too great here. And, you know, the potential reward, you know, again, if things go spectacularly well across the board from 10 and under tennis, you know, all through to the national championships, the, you know, the reward is, you know, frankly, pretty small.
Great. Thank you for that, Jeff. Antonio, do you want to get some final words? And then, Marty, I'm going to give you a chance, and we're down to our last minute or so.
Well, no, I think, you know, Jeff said it well, and I said it earlier. I think you do not grow a sport by shrinking it. You keep opportunities. You let people have choice. Don't limit their ability to do and to play.
Thank you. And Marty?
Thanks for the opportunity to come on. Thanks for everyone for participating. I don't think that ultimately the opportunities are being limited. I think that we're defining the standard, and we're broadening space and encouraging to reach higher. And I think that both get great points, and I do think that it's affected as time goes on. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. just to clarify, the listening meetings are complete as they were scheduled. USTA has told me they have reserved the right to hold additional listening meetings if they deem them necessary. So, of course, I will post any dates and locations on the Parenting Aces blog. And for those of you who didn't have an opportunity to attend a listening meeting but would like to voice your thoughts on these 2014 changes, whether you're in favor or opposed or not sure, I encourage you to email letusknow@usta.com. Those emails are going directly to Bill Mountford at USTA, and Bill has assured me that he is reading every single one and responding as he can. So I encourage all of you to take a moment, share your thoughts with Bill at letusknow@usta.com. Thanks to Jeff, to Antonio, to Marty for taking time out on this Monday afternoon to be with us. Jeff, I know you are across the pond in Scotland, so big thanks to you for for taking time out of what I'm sure is a very busy day. And for those of you listening, I hope you'll share the show with your other tennis friends so that everybody stays informed on what's coming down the pike for our kids. Thanks for tuning in. Talk to you guys next week.